from deep inside your radio.
So, ladies and gentlemen, now the question is clear. The basis for voting for the resolution for the war in Iraq was supposedly the national intelligence estimate that was cooked up. Provided by the CIA to the Congress. I believe specifically the Senate requested it. So you would think that, despite the fact that you actually, as a congressperson, had to go into a special secure room, sign in, probably, sign out when you left, that before voting on such a momentous, portentous document as the resolution authorizing the president to invade Iraq, that almost all of your senators and representatives would have read the National Intelligence Estimate. Just like in the almost 2 years since Katrina, you would have assumed that almost every congressman and senator would have at least visited New Orleans to see the scale of the disaster. Well, in both cases, ladies and gentlemen, you'd be wrong, except more congresspeople have visited New Orleans, I think close to half, neither California senator, I'm proud to say, than read the National Intelligence Estimate. John McCain, he didn't read it. Chris Dodd, he didn't read it. Hillary Clinton, she didn't read it. None of the other senators running for president has read the document. According to the Washington Post, only six senators viewed it before voting for war. So they've got an excuse. They didn't know. They didn't know what we didn't know. See, the administration says it was based on the intelligence we had, which was flawed. The Senate has a better excuse. We didn't even have the intelligence. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not just China. An Ohio company has been added to the list of firms adding the industrial toxin melamine to animal feed ingredients. Those feeds have been eaten by livestock and fish meant for human consumption. Melamine. The company's been doing it for a long time, according to the Food and Drug Administration. The company used melamine as a binding agent. Everybody's got an agent these days, to hold feed granules in pellet form. The level of melamine appears to be too low to harm humans who have eaten animals that consumed the tainted food. The company is Tembec BTLSR. Easy name to remember. When they don't want you to remember their names, boy, they're good at it, aren't they? Tembec BTLSR. Ask for it by name. That's the name of the company, Toledo, Ohio. They sold the melamine-laden ingredients to Unescope, which, unlike the sound, isn't in the entertainment business. They made three animal food products, one for cattle, sheep, and goats, two for fish and shrimp. You like shrimp? The Justice Department's Inspector General has weighed in. You know, we like to keep track of what the Inspectors General are telling us. Glenn Fine says in a report that federal anti-crime task forces often duplicate their efforts and do not communicate well with one another. This is how many years after 9/11? Even anti-crime, forget about anti-terrorism, anti-crime task forces do not communicate well with each other. Fine's report documented three instances in which federal agents mistook each other for criminals because they did not know about each other's operations. I had one right here. Federal agents mistook each other for criminals. That's primetime television, that is. And, ladies and gentlemen, organic bees appear to be unaffected by the mysterious disorder that's killing off commercial bees, according to some beekeepers in Canada. The mainstream beekeeping industry has lost up to one-third of its populations. Almost no reports of colony collapse disorder among the 1,000 organic beekeepers across North America. Says one organic beekeeper from Prince Edward Island, PEI, Quote, that's the big thing when you have organic bees. Your bees stay alive. End quote. But fortunately, senators aren't reading that either. Hello, welcome to the show. 40 years old this weekend.
It's getting better all the time. I used to get mad at my school.
I can't complain.
The teachers that taught me weren't cool.
I can't complain.
They're holding me down, turning me round, filling me up with your rules. I've got to admit, it's getting better.
Man, his bass string sounded loose. Hello, I'm from the edge of America, and that's a good thing. From the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, it's time for news from outside the bubble. British military chiefs are drawing up plans to withdraw all British troops from Iraq within 12 months. The Ministry of Defense plans to pull troops out of Iraq within a year. Iraq is seen as the most dangerous country on earth. How did that happen? Man, we went in. It was so quiet there. A fresh timetable for a unilateral withdrawal from the country by next May will be presented to the incoming Prime Minister Gordon Brown within weeks. He will be told by defense chiefs that Britain should withdraw from Iraq in quick order and concentrate on fighting the Taliban in Afghanistan. Why, that's... Yeah. Until now, the government and the military of Britain have both insisted the withdrawal would be dictated by events and not time. The lack of progress in Iraq... What? Excuse me? This is from the conservative British newspaper The Telegraph. The lack of progress in Iraq and the need to send more troops to Afghanistan has forced the government to accelerate its withdrawal plan. Shocking. Just shocking. A senior military official told the Sunday Telegraph, Britain is not physically capable of fighting wars in Afghanistan and Iraq at the same time. The question is, which do we give up? The government and the defense chiefs have decided that we should give up Iraq. Give up Iraq. The security situation has dramatically deteriorated, according to the Telegraph. British troops in Basra are attacked every time they leave their bases. Troops rarely conduct routine patrols in the city, and those who do expect to be attacked within 20 minutes of venturing out. So keep those patrols to 15, won't you? According to the Times of London, British commanders have drawn up plans to allow the troops to be withdrawn by the end of this year. So it's just a question of how soon they're coming out, but they're coming out. It's time, not events. But as to the status of the situation in Iraq at this moment, there was an incident this week. British troops were set upon by insurgents dressed as Iraqi police, driving an Iraqi police vehicle. What does that tell you about the Iraqi police, ladies and gentlemen? Anyway, here is former conservative foreign minister of Britain, Malcolm Rifkind, talking about what that should tell us.
But let's not forget, although we're attaching a lot of importance rightly to the incident yesterday, every single day of the week, dozens, sometimes hundreds of ordinary Iraqis are subjected to the same treatment of being kidnapped, killed, injured, and in other ways having their freedom severely limited, if not removed. So the situation is one of virtual anarchy.
That's good progress. Virtual anarchy, that's where you use computers to... more news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. In case you think Britain is hipper than we are. Some do. A 37-year-old man jailed for a crime he did not commit is being charged almost $14,000 for his time in prison. Warren Blackwell from Northamptonshire has been told the sum will be deducted from the compensation he's being paid. The sum will cover the money he saved on rent and food while he was in prison. He spent 3 years in jail convicted of sexually assaulting a woman. The woman had a history of false claims against men. It all works out well, doesn't it? The Ministry of Justice, well named, said deductions were normal procedure and should not be called bed and breakfast costs. He would receive compensation minus the sum which has been assessed as the amount of money he would have saved, he had saved from normal expenses while in jail. He says, "I was flabbergasted when I was told. How can they justify charging innocent people when murderers live rent-free?" I believe that's a rhetorical question. "The purpose of the compensation," explained a Ministry of Justice spokesperson, "is to put an individual back into the financial position they would have been but for the miscarriage of justice, but not to a better position." Blackwell said that was... Blackwell? No. Oh. Said there was no chance of that happening in his case because his legal bills were huge. Nice people doing nice things. From the Guardian newspaper in London, there was a spectacular breach of security at the new U.S. embassy in Baghdad this week. This is outside the bubble. The embassy is the most heavily fortified in the world, built to the highest security specifications possible. Access to the site is restricted to those with difficult-to-obtain security passes. We've heard nothing about this because we were so busy listening to being told about that plot never got anywhere near anything in New York. But, you know, it was announced by a U.S. attorney, and nothing we've experienced in the last 6 months would incline us to believe they're political. The master plan for the U.S. embassy in Baghdad was posted for all to see on the website of the architectural company that designed it, Berger Devine Yeager, based in... And here's where the British reveal their lack of knowledge of American geography. Quote, "based in Kansas, Missouri," unquote. Nobody knows anything. It's the information age. Computer-generated color images provided an overview of the entire complex, the embassy building itself, the ambassador's residence, a Marine Corps guard post, a swimming pool, as well as volleyball and basketball courts. The company has now removed the images from its website after the State Department complained, but the images have been picked up and are available on a variety of sites around the world. The website images, for your convenience, were labeled Baghdad U.S. Embassy Compound Master Plan. One shows U.S. Embassy Deputy Chief Mission Residence with the Marine outside a half-open steel gate. The State Department acknowledged that the website posting posed problems, but a spokesman from Berger Devine Yeager played it down, saying that better images of the embassy would be available on Google Earth. All right, that's reassuring. The Guardian also reports this week that there's evidence of serious irregularities at the heart of the process the world is relying on to control global warming, the Clean Development Mechanism. Now, what could be wrong with something called that? You might have to oil it every once in a while, but it's supposed to offset greenhouse gases emitted in the developed world by selling carbon credits from elsewhere, has been contaminated by gross incompetence, rule-breaking, and possible fraud by companies in the developing world, according to UN paperwork, an unpublished expert report, and alarming feedback from projects on the ground. That ground feedback, man, that can hurt your ears. So it's like another oil for food. The Department of Defense spent nearly $31 million in 3 years in condolence payments to civilians in Iraq and Afghanistan. Aww. But it didn't track how it spent the money, according to the Government Accountability Office. It's the most detailed public study of compensation payments in the two wars. The military makes condolence payments for killing or injuring a civilian or damaging property. The department doesn't indicate how many of these payments went for killed civilians, injured civilians, or for property damage. And we haven't even thought yet of asking them of deducting the money for the food they might have eaten in a U.S. military hospital while they were recovering from their injuries. Let's think about that, shall we? We got to pay for this war somehow. That's news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. But onward on that subject of Iraq, it's not just Malcolm Rifkind. It's not just the British Ministry of Defense. Norway is the most peaceful country in the world. Iraq, the least. This is a study announced this week, the Global Peace Index. Rated 121 countries from Algeria to Zimbabwe on some 24 factors, including levels of violence, organized crime, and the military budget. Most European countries, including Britain, rank in the top of the most peaceful. The United States is nearer the bottom in 96th place. Russia is fifth from last in 118th. This is a wake-up call, says Steve Killilea. Tom?
Killilea.
Uh-huh. Who commissioned the study from the Economist Intelligence Unit, part of the Economist magazine. Norway is followed by New Zealand in second place, and Denmark in third. Iraq is at the bottom, just below Sudan. Israel only two places from the bottom. The index is backed by international figures, including the Dalai Lama, Desmond Tutu, Jimmy Carter, and U.S. economist Joseph Stiglitz, all winners of the Nobel Peace Prize. Small, stable countries, which are part of regional blocs, such as the 27-nation European Union, are the most likely to be more peaceful. Income and education are crucial in promoting peace, said the study. Income and education. Let's have some of that. And while the U.S. military sends more troops into Baghdad for stays of 15 months or longer, Washington Post reports some Iraqi army soldiers in the same counterinsurgency operation are on a rotation schedule lasting just 3 months. Military experts, some have said the 90-day Iraqi tours of duty are not long enough for the units to provide adequate help. The practice also complicates the task of ensuring that enough experienced Iraqi units will be available to replace U.S. brigades in the capital as they're drawn down. Yeah, that's important to keep in mind as the Brits leave and we're alone. Brigadier General Michael Jones from the Joint Chiefs of Staff says a shortage of experienced Iraqi units in Baghdad is one of the reasons they're relooking at their force structure. All right, let's take a deep breath and think about something nice, like Pakistan, our friend. Pakistani police have arrested 9 people, 4 of them doctors, for abducting people, drugging them, and stealing their kidneys for transplant operations. Weren't we just hearing a couple weeks ago that Pakistanis are trying to increase tourism? Well, sure they are. They need the kidneys. Selling kidneys from living donors is not illegal in Pakistan. That's all you really need to know, as far as I'm concerned. I'll repeat that. Selling kidneys from living donors is not illegal in Pakistan. Let's all go. Come on. Hands. Medical experts say Pakistan has a reputation as the world's, quote, kidney bazaar. This is from the Australian newspaper, The Age. Kidney bazaar. That sounds so much worse than liver bazaar to me for some reason. Police said those arrested in the eastern city of Lahore tricked people, then drugged them before removing their kidneys. Tricked, then drugged. This is a complicated operation. You'd think they'd just drug them, but you have to trick them in order to drug them. You don't have to trick them once you've drugged them, I would think. But I'm not a criminal. Quote, these poor people were given tranquilizers and deprived of their kidneys without their consent, according to Lahore Police Chief Malik Mohammed Iqbal. Hundreds of rich foreigners come to Pakistan every year and buy kidneys from live impoverished donors in a business worth millions. Pakistan has no law governing the trade in kidneys. A laborer, 36-year-old laborer, said he had gone with a man who'd promised him a job, but he ended up in a hospital with a kidney missing. And the Pope, Pope Benedict, that's a pope with some hollandaise sauce on top. No, it's not. Excuse me. Pope Benedict called on Pakistan to strengthen democracy. When's the next election in Vatican City, by the way? And guarantee freedom of expression. The principles of democracy assure the freedom to express political opinions publicly in a variety of ways, the Pope said, talking to Pakistan's new ambassador to the Vatican. Government opponents in Pakistan have called for the restoration of full democracy, but Pakistani authorities are tightening rules to restrict live television broadcasts of opposition rallies. The Pope said strengthening democracy would bolster national solidarity. The Pope, ladies and gentlemen, wants more democracy in our friend Pakistan. This is Le Show, and we haven't checked pork belly prices in, it seems to me, just an awful lot. All right, I'm getting word that we have a call on our newsmaker line, so let's take that, and then we'll get back to the other stuff in a moment. Hello, you're on the air.
Harry Shearer?
Yes, guilty as charged.
I'll tell you something.
Hmm?
Do you recognize this voice, Harry? And by the way, I'm loving the show today.
Thank you. It's a
so glad I got through. And may I just say one quick thing?
Yeah.
Call screener is the nicest call screener of any radio show I've called.
Isn't she a nice lady?
Wonderful woman.
Yeah, actually, my aunt.
Really?
Yeah. You know, because I wanted a personal touch in
is
the call screener.
Is she from the call screener Shearers?
Yes, she is. The call screener side of the family.
Fun.
Yeah. How does the show sound when you're on hold? I mean, does it sound as good on the telephone?
Sounds better.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I have to look
into that. I'm just taking a wild guess as far as the
you
voice.
You know this voice, Harry. Come on. Don't be coy.
Okay. Yvonne Della Femina.
That's right. How are you, Harry? It's so wonderful to hear from you again, even though I called.
It's great to hear from you, Yvonne. It's been a while. I want to...
Too long.
Excuse me?
It's been too long? Is that what you were going to say?
Not really, but I'll go with that. Just why don't you, normally when you call, I have to sort of brief listeners on your life experience, and I'm always afraid that I'm going to say something wrong. Why don't you just give us the briefest summary of who you've been?
Oh, sure. I've been in show business most of this time, mm-hmm. my career, Harry. I was a life coach. You mean that sort of thing or more on a more personal
psychosexual
basis.
The psychosexual stuff would be good.
Well, I started life as a guy.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work out for me, as you know. We've talked about it.
Right.
I'm a woman. That didn't gel like I had hoped. Became a guy again. Met someone. Had the heart broken.
Mm.
You know how that can be.
Sure.
And are you seeing anyone now, by the way?
I'm married. I'm very happy.
And then that didn't work out. And then became a woman again. Became a guy then and just became a woman and really found myself and it blossomed and... You know, thrilled with life, taking the time to smell the roses and call Harry Shearer.
Oh, aren't you sweet?
Because you have meant so much to me.
Thank you. Well, it's a lot better than calling the roses and smelling Harry Shearer. I'll tell you that right now.
See what you do?
Yeah.
That's what you do.
That is what I do.
My people love you, Harry.
Thank you. So, Yvonne, you're calling today on the newsmaker line, which suggests that there's news afoot. What is what's up with you?
Well, I don't want to piggyback on a tragedy,
mm-hmm.
Harry, but, mm-hmm. and I knew you would be interested in this, I dated Phil Spector briefly, and I was not called to testify, which is fine.
Yeah.
I don't really need the ink at this point. Thank mm-hmm. God things are in the business are going great for me.
What things are in the business are happening for you?
Well, I'm doing it currently working for the Lunesta cruise ship line, you know, the people who make the sleeping aids.
Uh-huh.
They have a cruise ship. Fabulous. And I've got a six-month gig, as we say,
yeah.
on there. I'm doing a one-woman show, What If Ethel Rosenberg Had Lived, which is wonderful.
Wow.
It's on the same cruise where Rita Moreno lectures.
Uh-huh.
That's... So it's just fun, and there's, it's and no one has gotten any lung or infection. It's a clean as a whistle. Come
that's
on
great.
Back to the cruise line, everybody. Come on back.
Yeah, that's nice. That's nice to hear. But anyway, let's get to the news of this, which is, as I recall, you said you dated Phil Spector, the music producer who's now on trial for murder?
Yes, Harry. I dated. I had one date with Philip.
What?
One date only.
Yeah.
But it was a memorable date. You know, I was a gigantic fan, like so many of us from our generation was. Were.
Uh-huh.
I'm a little younger than you, but I remember Phil very, very well.
Now, when you say you had this one date with him, was...
Well, I had one date with him.
Yeah.
I met Philip for the first time, the second time I was a guy.
Second time you were a guy?
Yeah, I was working at the men's department of Cy DeVore in Beverly Hills, a wonderful men's shop.
Sure.
Yeah, and he had come in for some pants and one of those fancy frilly tuxedo shirts
mm-hmm.
that Cy DeVore is famous for.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was a bit arrogant, a little full of himself, mainly about his inseam.
Really?
Yeah. And he wanted the extra scalloping on the tuxedo shirt. And I guess you could say that even then Phil Spector was, bleeding his own shirts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
He was full of himself.
Yeah.
And the second time, I don't know if you're interested in all this backstory, but...
Yeah, I certainly am.
Oh, my God, let's see. I had been a woman for the third and last time, please God, and I was teaching ballet to little girls in Alhambra.
Uh-huh.
And I'll never forget it because it was memorable. I was in my teal leotard. My Mazda had broken down on 405. Philip and his driver, not the same driver that's testified,
right,
pulled off the side of the road. It was like 2 in the afternoon, and they helped me change my tire. And it was only like, it was early in the day, and it was interesting and stuck out to me because Phil had 2 Brandy Alexanders when he got out of the car.
And
I was so flustered at being late for class, I didn't bother telling him that we had met at Cy DeVore when was a guy.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Was this the driver that spoke English better?
No, strangely, this is a fella, not the same chap who's marvelous and articulate. This was a gentleman who, named Ramon, who understood English perfectly, but had throat cancer.
No. Oh.
And he spoke through one of those little...
Oh, God.
Where would...
Yeah,
like,
you
know?
Mm-hmm.
And it made me nervous when he was driving us, because he drove with one hand.
Oh.
You know? And yeah. I'm a skittish...
You're a skittish gal.
I'd rather be the host and the guest in a car, you know?
Uh-huh. So, tell us about the occasion of this date, I guess.
He asked me out, and he picked me up at the ballet class,
uh-huh.
You know, and I was, you know, thrilled. I was in between romantic entanglements at the time.
And how did you look at this point?
I looked great. I had been working out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And felt good about myself and was very supple because I was dancing so much.
Limber? You were limber?
Yes, very limber. Uh-huh. And I could, you know, I don't know how graphic you want to get. I could put both legs, feet behind my neck.
Wow.
While driving.
No, you're just kidding.
I'm kidding. I'm trying to do a Harry Shearer on you.
I appreciate that.
How am I doing?
You're doing great.
Anywho, Philip picked me up mm-hmm. at my ballet class.
Yes.
And we went to Trader Vic's and we had... And this is what's so interesting, you know, the classic famous 6 Navy Grogs he had, you know, those
mm-hmm,
drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful umbrellas.
Rum drinks, right?
Rum drink. I didn't have that.
Yeah.
Kir Royale.
Uh-huh.
And Phil said, what would you like to do now? And he was a little bit in his cups. And I said, after one drink, because I drink so little,
mm-hmm.
and I am on the antidepressive medication, I said, I'd love to see Hope Floats, which was just out then. And by the time that movie was over, boy, he had sobered up, you know? I don't know if you saw the film.
No, I didn't.
And we went back to the castle in Alhambra, and I was taken in surprise, really, to see that all the houses around the castle were so, you know, I want to say dumpy.
Dumpy is what
I want to say crappy, but I want to say dumpy
okay.
radio.
Yeah.
It's like those houses like a block from the airport. I was
mm-hmm.
shocked by that.
Mm-hmm.
And Philip offered me another Kir Royale, and I had one. And he showed me John Lennon's guitar.
Uh-huh.
Some of the hair he pulled out of Ronnie Spector's head when she tried to leave his little flesh on the ends of
uh-huh.
it.
Uh-huh.
It was like, Harry, kind of like a trip down my own private rock and roll hall of fame.
Wow. You must have been thrilled.
Oh, gosh. And, you know, old Mr. Dawn started creeping up, you know, and got a little, you know, and I had a dance class early that morning. And
mm-hmm.
I said I wanted to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And Philip was... The gentleman excused himself, and he went to the bathroom, and I could hear him, you know, urinating and crying a little bit. And I just thought maybe he had prostate problem, whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, painful whatever.
Whatever,
yeah.
No, normal.
Yeah.
Anyway, he comes back, and he pulled a gun.
Wow.
Pulled a gun on me and tells me he wants to have sex with me.
Well, you must have been kind of flattered.
Well, I said to him, I was flattered. I said, but Phil, in the interest of full disclosure, I have to say I used to be a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he put the gun away and thanked me for a wonderful evening. And, you know, Harry, I'm not saying that I'm glad he didn't kill me.
Yeah.
But as a woman, I was offended in a weird way. I don't know. I think the gals can understand this.
Mm.
I mean, you know, at the time, for all intents and purposes, medically and certainly emotionally, I was a woman.
Yeah.
So I did find it a tad sexist that he didn't kill me, if you know what I mean. And I don't mean literally.
No, I understand what you mean.
No?
Yeah. Just the removal of the gun itself was kind of an...
Well, a little bit of an insult, you
know?
Yeah,
yeah. Now, have you talked to any of the authorities or the attorneys involved in the trial? Are you involved in the trial at all?
I tried to get Bruce Cutler.
Yeah.
I was, you know, I couldn't, they never returned my call. I guess they had what they needed.
That's Phil Spector's defense attorney.
Yeah.
In other words, you were volunteering to testify?
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
You know, and then this job came up and I didn't pursue it, you know. We set sail. And I guess they had enough witnesses and... You know, I'm not taking sides, and I don't know, and I wish everybody luck, you know.
Well, you clearly have experience with the alleged perpetrator. Why don't you share what you know about him?
Well, how can I say it? You know, it's just very hard for me to believe that anybody who made a wall of sound would kill anybody, you know?
Mm.
And I'm not saying I believe the defense team's version of the events, but I do know, you know, that I personally have tried to shoot myself at least on two separate first dates, so... I'm not saying I can put myself in the poor victims. I'm just saying that, you know, but for me at the time, I was depressed from all the hormone I was taking.
Yeah.
I was in a foreign country both times.
Wow. Which country?
You know, that, huh?
Which country?
Caracas in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And that added to the depression. And
mm-hmm.
So I'd rather just stay on the sidelines on this one, you know.
But
I can kind of say, well, you know, I've got it all within me to see many outcomes from the onsets.
Well, Yvonne,
of the event.
Yeah, where did he hold the gun when he pulled it on you?
He was bringing it to my face when I said I had been a guy, and then he put it right away, and then you know got me my coat.
Uh huh. Would you say you felt hustled out at that point?
I felt like here's your hat. What's your hurry? Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
to be
mm-hmm.
real honest.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, maybe that's why I wasn't called. Maybe I may not be the most sympathetic witness.
Did you have a sense that if you hadn't said that at that moment, the gun would have gone, what, into your mouth or to your temple or anything?
I don't know where the relationship would have gone, Harry. You know, you never know. So much of it is fate.
Mm-hmm. Chemistry.
Chemistry, you know, where you are in mm-hmm. your own
mm-hmm.
journey.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, did you ever try to get in touch with Phil Spector himself again or just go through his attorney? I mean, did you try to...
No, I just went through the attorney.
No.
I did call a number that he gave me, but I think he pulled one of those one number was wrong things.
Yeah.
So you can't really get them.
Yeah.
Which I hate. I hate that.
Yvonne, how do you look now? Just give us a verbal picture of you now as a woman.
This is going to be maybe for your history buffs. You know William Jennings Bryan?
Sure.
The great golden tongue orator?
Yes.
As a woman, a beautiful, strong kind of Babe Dietrichson.
Uh-huh.
But now.
Yes.
Today.
Okay, and so are you a blonde? Are you a lovely gray-haired lady? What?
I'm kind of a platinum white blonde.
Oh, very. You know? Yeah, that was.
Time of year in the summer because I love to swim.
That was so hot in the 50s. What happened to that?
I think it's back.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, good. And how do you dress these? What's your style? What's your look? What's your...
My style is...
What's your movie?
Kind of rock and roll preppy.
Uh-huh.
By the way, Harry, do you know, my manager, Wally Laguna, says he's a big friend of yours, went to school with you, said you were dear, dear friends.
Wally Laguna?
Yes.
Yeah.
You remember him?
No, I don't.
Oh.
But I, you know, I was not really a fitter inner in school. Yvonne, if I just pressed you to the wall, rhetorically speaking.
Oh.
Rhetorically speaking.
Okay.
And said... do you think that Phil Spector is guilty of the crime of which he's charged? What would you say?
You would be asking me, or the lawyers?
No, this would be just me.
Just you.
Just you and me talking on the radio.
gee, I'll tell you, Harry, it depends what day you got me.
Wow.
You know?
Mm.
I'm so back and forth on this one.
Really?
I have more strong opinions on other murders, though.
Like?
That guy who put his wife in the boat, took her out,
yeah,
body out. There's several guys who take them on the boat.
Yeah, it's a thing. Yeah. It's a thing now.
Don't get a boat, fellas. My wife.
If Phil Spector called you, let's say he's on bail now, right? Or is he in jail?
I think he's on bail.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he found someone. The wife looks wonderful, like a pillar of strength, really.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife's mother. And the wife's grandmother. Did you see her?
No.
Yeah.
They all looked like pillars of strength?
Yes, they all look like three pillars of strength.
If for some reason you ran into Phil Spector, let's say, changing another tire,
mm-hmm.
or if he called you, would you go out on a date with him?
I have the same number, by the way.
You do?
Yes.
Good. Would you go out on a date with him?
That's a tough one.
Mm.
I'd go out with another couple.
Uh-huh. Would the woman and the other couple have to be a transsexual, or?
No, absolutely not.
So you're broad-minded and...
Yeah. No, just somebody fun, someone that can carry the ball conversationally.
Mm-hmm. Do you know
somebody? To the Renaissance Fair, something like that, where it wasn't like a date.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just kind of you're doing something. I love those kind of dates.
Just
you know?
Fun.
Yeah, when you're kind of it's an event.
Yeah. Did Phil Spector seem, in the time that you knew him, paranoid? That's been a word that's been used to describe him a lot.
Not paranoid, just kind of like... opinionated.
Uh-huh.
You know, at one point he kicked the driver in the back of the head, and I thought, ooh, where's that coming from?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Where was it coming from?
Back seat.
Oh.
No, it was just coming from, I don't know, he was a little drunk, and, you know, it wasn't the same Phil from the beginning of the evening, I'll tell you that.
Really? Really? What would be, if he did call... What would be your dream?
Well, let's role play.
Yeah, what would be your dream date with him at this point? Would it be the Renaissance Fair, or would it be...
I'd love to see the Drowsy Chaperone, and
uh-huh.
I can't get tickets.
Uh-huh.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love the music from that.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe he's...
Scandi is closed.
Yeah, Scandi is closed 25 years ago.
Cock and Bull is closed.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I don't know. Oh. All the kids.
It's that guy. It's that Ian Schrager. Everything now. It's Ian Schrager this, you know?
Yeah, I do know.
I want, you know, I'm a meat and potatoes gal. I'd love to just go have a, you know, big pile of meat somewhere.
Excuse me?
You know, like the way Cock and Bull work.
I see.
Go up and they cut you an end cut. You ask them nice.
Yeah. All right, well, maybe he's listening. And if he were listening, Yvonne, given your experience, what would be your message for Phil Spector?
Well, I guess I would just throw back his own... title back at him, River Deep, Mountain High.
Mm-hmm.
Phil,
mm-hmm.
There's going to be the Mountain Highs again. You're in the River Deep now, the River Deep part, but then the Mountain High again.
Mm-hmm.
Come. And not to lose faith, baby, you know?
Wow.
And,
so you would, despite your own personal pain, be giving a message of inspiration?
You got to. Because in this country, he's innocent until they show that he did it.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's.
I think.
That's.
Otherwise, let's all go to Cuba and get that health care. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
Well, then why are we living in this great country?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, let's just Michael Moore ourselves down to Cuba.
Got it.
Otherwise, the founding fathers and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. So that speaks to me of a certain amount of growth, Yvonne, since the last time we talked.
Well, you know, Harry, I have covered the waterfront emotionally,
mm-hmm.
and I know what it is to be down.
Mm-hmm.
I also know what it feels like to be in a lot of pain in between your legs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what,
mm-hmm.
it gives you empathy.
Yeah.
And even if the good Lord and the L.A. Jurisprudence people
uh-huh.
find him to have been culpable,
yes.
then I say, okay, then he'll do his time, and he still has amazing ears musically.
Uh-huh. So maybe he'll be, like, what, very musical in jail, is what you're suggesting?
Well, I mean, maybe he can teach music production to the Bloods and the Crips or something.
Oh, what a...
And give something back.
Yeah, that's a wonderful vision. Yvonne De La Femina, you're on the cruise ship now?
I'm on the cruise ship, and Harry, can I just do a quick little plug? I know your show is not that kind of thing. You're on public radio.
Right, non-commercial, but go ahead.
May I?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, thanks. You know, I'm lending my name to a small... kitchen grill called the Hamburger Bullet. Now, it's kind of like a George Foreman kind of a grill.
Yeah.
And with any luck and this little plug, it should be available in all your 99-cent stores in about a year and a half. So look for it.
All right. How much will it sell for?
99 cents. And you can do chicken patties on it, and we're still experimenting with the meat. Real handy little thing. And
got it. Well, good luck with that. And when you say you're lending your name, meaning there's some funds?
Trying to find financing for it.
Yeah.
We're just trying to find the right people that we feel good about.
Yeah, good people.
We'll make a wonderful quality product.
Yeah, for 99 cents.
For 99 cents.
That's amazing.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yvonne,
you can't even get chopped meat for 99 cents.
So where...
You're able to cook it.
Where is the ship moored right now that you'd be calling?
In Long Beach.
Oh, okay. Well, good luck on the rest of the cruise.
Well, thanks so much. Come on down and see us when we're in dry dock and
I'll do my best.
Bethel Rosenberg had lived. It's a little bit of a history lesson, but it's not dry. It's not like going to school.
I understand.
A lot of fun. A lot of comedy in it.
Interesting. Interesting. So, what, family comedy with the husband and the son-in-law?
Yeah, in our version, in our kind of fanciful version, she gives up Julius and goes on and has a fantastic life, opens a little Chez Panisse-type restaurant. And, you know, the interesting thing, Harry, we cook on stage.
With the grill?
We actually cook a meal on stage.
With your grill or not?
No, not with my grill,
oh.
Although that's a fabulous idea.
Isn't it?
But I cook a fish dish in one of those parchment pouches.
Wow, on stage.
But the thing is, and maybe you could explain this to me,
yeah.
You can't serve it to the audience because of the health code.
Oh, sure. Well,
you smell all this divine food.
Well, Yvonne,
can't give it to the audience.
Two words would explain that. Show folks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Yvonne Delafemina, thank you for your insight into...
Well, thank you, Harry, and gosh, keep up what you're doing because we love it.
Thank you. And just one final question on a personal basis. Gal to stay?
Oh, gosh, yes. Never been happier. And it's the year of the woman. You know that.
Yeah, yeah. Good to hear that.
Yvonne
Delafemina, good luck to you.
Thanks, Harry. Great talking to you.
Thanks.
Be in touch more often, please.
I don't have your number. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Nicholas Drake, how your songs made my heart ache. Each word that you spoke, every note that you sang, more dead than alive. How those demons inside you denied you the joys of an everyday scribe. At an old 29, while you thought it was time to move on.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week, won't you?
We're so sorry.
Oh, let's start with the TB guy, shall we?
I'm very sorry for any grief or pain that I've caused anyone. I think if people look at my life, and that's not how I've lived my life.
Okay. The TB guy, ladies and gentlemen. And there's more. Ousted Premier of Thailand, Thaksin Shinawatra, this week apologized to his supporters after his political party, the Thairak Thai Party, was dissolved and he was banned from politics over violations of electoral law. In a handwritten letter dated from London, where he's been based since his ouster, he expressed surprise that he and other senior party members, 110 of them, had been banned from politics for 5 years. Quote, I, as the founder and leader of the party up until the coup, apologize to all party members, executives, and supporters that met with this unexpected fate. Unquote. Also in Asia, Chinese students who humiliated a teacher in class, reminiscent of the practices during the Cultural Revolution, apologized after a video clip was posted online, triggering national criticism. The five-minute clip showed a group of students throwing bottles at their geography teacher. God, I know how much I wanted to do that. And jeering him in a noisy classroom. A male student was shown abusing the teacher, aged nearly 70, rushing towards him, swearing and threatening to slap his face. The school's website was later hacked by angry internet users, and thousands of people nationwide condemned the students and urged them to apologize. Student humiliation of teachers was encouraged during the 1966-76 Cultural Revolution, the great leap forward. Teachers then were spat on, cursed, and made to wear dunces hats. Quote, please allow me to offer my sincere apologies to teacher, son, our schoolmaster, all the teachers and students, and also to the public. The Beijing News quoted the students as saying in an open letter they had not intended to humiliate the teacher, but just to have some fun, they were quoted as saying. There was an apology after a fight between a pitcher and a catcher of the Chicago Cubs. It's all my fault. I feel bad, says Carlos Zambrano, who started the altercation. We're all humans. We all make mistakes. I want to apologize to the Cubs organization and Cubs fans and everybody who saw it on television. I hope this ends everything, said. Michael Barrett, also part of the festivities. After challenging New Jersey Governor John Corzine for not wearing a seatbelt, Today Show co-host Matt Lauer apologized this week for an interview with Republican presidential contender Mitt Romney, in which neither man wore a seatbelt while driving through New Hampshire. By the way, one of Mitt Romney's kids is named Tag. Mitt and Tag? What's going on here? Can we have some American names, ladies and gentlemen, please? I'm not saying anything's wrong with Tag. It's a good name. Iran will allow Al Jazeera to resume its presence in Iran now that representatives of the network have reportedly apologized for broadcasting an insult against Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani and made, quote, some changes at managerial level. Good to know even the Iranians are angry at Al Jazeera. Down under in Australia, the news director of one of the three major networks, Channel 7, has been arrested for drunk driving and dangerous driving. Peter Meakin, news director of Channel 7, said, quote, I would like to say that I apologize for my conduct. I have been found guilty. I apologize to my family for the grief that I've caused them. I apologize to my employer and colleagues. He's really sorry. Pittsburgh Steelers offensive line coach Larry Zierlein apologized this week for accidentally emailing an explicit sex video to numerous NFL employees, including the commissioner of the league. He said the incident has been difficult for him and his family, and that he intends to use his team-issued computer only for football business from now on. It's hard because I made an inexcusable mistake, Zierlein said. It was hard first for the organization. But when you've been at this stuff for as long as a lot of us have, tough things happen and you've got to move on, and that's what we're doing, unquote. The governor of Jakarta in Indonesia has accepted a letter of apology from the premier of the Australian state of New South Wales, saying he's been touched by the apology. I won't even bother with the rest of that. That's just nice. The corporate officials of Sears have apologized to two police officers who were told to leave the retailer's store at a Des Moines mall because their uniforms distracted the store's security guards. Officers Richard Glade and David Coy said they were kicked out of the Sears store in the Merle Hay Mall in separate incidents. Kimberly Freely, a Sears spokeswoman, described the episode as a case of mistaken identity. Our store management was attempting to address an ongoing issue of excessive socialization between mall security officers and store associates, which had been hampering associates' productivity. In no way was this an attempt to prevent on- or off-duty officers from shopping at our store, said Freely. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Where would you like your nuclear waste? One Australian state could be keeping nuclear waste in a shipping container parked in a hospital parking lot. Or you can take the Russian approach. According to a Norwegian environmental group, tanks of spent Russian nuclear fuel were dumped in the Arctic, are now leaking and risk setting off an uncontrolled chain reaction. It's clean, safe nuclear power. And just briefly, news of the warm. Two photographs taken 40 years apart show that one of the world's most spectacular ice formations, the field of ice towers around Mount Everest, is shrinking. I know the feeling. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR Worldwide on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 shortwave, in mighty 104 in Berlin, on both XM and Sirius satellite radio. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/the show, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com, and available around the world at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, on your computer, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like blasting that nuclear waste into space and being done with it if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, to the tip of the Le Show chapeau, to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlist available at harryshearer.com. Yvonne Della Femina is Tom Leopold. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.